Live from New York, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to be talking about how cranberry juice can help protect against heart disease and diabetes. You thought it was just good for the bladder. And how sugary drinks are linked to a high death toll worldwide. Wow, how far we've come understanding how dangerous this is. Is the paleo diet making you irritable, depressed, and sleep deprived? Bet it is. And muscadine grapes, I grow those down on my ranch. Delicious, they come out in August, very crunchy. And you could grow them. You could grow them in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. Well, the seed oil in there can help reduce obesity. And olive leaf extract is backed for positive effect on inflammation and heart health. Wow. So we have a lot on health and healing to share with you. And then I take a look wherever possible every day at the information that is requested from around the world. And for those in Europe, and we have lots of people listening from Europe, they want to know what's really going on with Greece and how might that impact them. So today, I'm going to share two reports. One is about the Central Bank of Central Banks. It's the Bank of International Settlements. Now, that's the top bank in the world. That is more important than the Federal Reserve or the European Union Central Bank or the International Monetary Fund or the World Bank. I'll tell you what it says. Also today, I'll give you the truth about the Greek debt crisis and the crashing markets from Professor Michael Hudson. And anytime he travels, when he comes back, we generally have lunch and go over what he has found. Now, mind you, he is invited by the leaders of the Chinese government and Icelandic government and all these governments to come in and talk one-on-one with him. And he is the most honest, straightforward, and large view person in economics I know. So you're going to get everything that I know about what's happening, like to happen. Then I get emails from people in Japan and the Hawaiian Islands. Want to know what's happening about Fukushima. Is it over? Not by a long shot. The latest on Fukushima. And also, yesterday I mentioned something that I'm going to do a little finer detail on today. I mentioned that there is a warming of the ocean. And I explained that when I first discussed this over 7 years ago in a series of one-hour specials on the 12 tipping points, I said this could throw much of Europe into an ice age. Now, I'm not talking about an ice age where you go to zero. You could go real quick in a matter of weeks into a real cold place. Now, we are going to have freezing. We will have returning to ice ages in different parts of the world, and we'll have just the opposite in other parts. So it's knowing where to be, when, how long this is going to happen, and we're in chaos theory, so there's no absolutes. But I'll tell you about what I just read from the University of Toronto an hour ago. It ties right in with what I was saying. So you see, we have a lot to deal with. And let's begin. Cranberries. Now, we know the cranberry is a superfood. It's super delicious and good for you, but not the sugary cranberry juice and not the sugary preserves, but rather cranberry concentrate, unsweetened. Now, we know that it can destroy bacteria in the bladder, but this is from USDA, and this is a major article, and here's what it says. Study finds polyphenol-rich cranberries may be a sustainable lifestyle approach to better health, protecting against heart disease and diabetes. We never knew that before. That's brand new. That's good. So this new study reveals that drinking the low-calorie cranberry juice cocktail can help lower the risk of chronic diseases that rank among the leading causes of death worldwide, including stroke, heart disease, and diabetes. And the finding is welcome news, considering the World Health Organization estimates that just those three diseases are killing 15 million people each year around the globe. And these illnesses are among the most common and costly health conditions. But fortunately, they're also among the most preventable through dietary intervention. And that's where this research comes in. It is the polyphenol-rich cranberry, the healing nutrients in the cranberry. And they did this 8-week study and with a group of adults, and they found that those who drank a glass, an 8-ounce glass of low-calorie cranberry juice twice a day against a group that had a similar drink, but it was a placebo drink. It was colored and flavored to look like cranberries, but it was just water. Quote, at the start and end of the experiment, the researchers measured things like blood pressure, blood sugar levels, blood lipids, as well as C-reactive protein, a marker of inflammation. All of these measurements come together to tell a story. The worse off these numbers are in an individual, the more likely he or she will be to face health conditions like diabetes, heart disease, and stroke. And then it goes on to talk about how when they drank the cranberry juice, it made all the difference in the world. So, here's the takeaway message. If you want to lessen your risk factors for heart disease, diabetes, and stroke, or if you know someone who has these, by all means, get them to be consuming, I would say, 16 ounces of cranberry juice a day, half in the morning, half in the afternoon. Why? Because the polyphenols in there are protecting you. And it's not just from cranberries. I suggest people boost their polyphenols with apples, blueberries, grapes, and cherries as well. They also work. It will forever stick in my mind when I did one of my very first debates, and I'd graduated from business college, but I didn't have any background in nutrition except as a lay person, as a consumer advocate. But they were throwing their top physicians and scientists who would, you know, spend the first several minutes talking about their credentials in any debate. And I guess they thought because I didn't have any academic credentials in nutrition then that in and of itself, just the fact that I was non-credentialed and they were credentialed would be enough for them to gain the audience's favoritism. It didn't work that way because even though I didn't have the credentials, which I quickly acknowledged, I did have some common sense and I had the research. And I remember the debate down in Atlanta where all the doctors were saying that what I was saying was nonsense and untrue. And then I asked a question. I said, I was just curious, do any of your doctors work for Coca-Cola or do you receive any money from Coca-Cola or its foundation? And there was total silence. I said, well, when I was waiting out in the green room, I heard you all talking and I believe it is true, you are employed by Coca-Cola. So if you want to start off saying you're a medical doctor and therefore have an advantage in truth because of your credential, then shouldn't you also say that you're really here as a spokesperson, as a propagandist, as a paid liar for Coca-Cola? And that got their attention because they weren't used to people dealing in debates that way. So that's how it went. Hundreds of debates. But one of the most contentious debates I ever did was on NBC, the Bob Kane show. It's a network show, and the person I was up against was the protege of the Cornflakes Professor. He was called the Cornflakes Professor from Harvard because he brought in so much money to Harvard from the refined sugar industry, all those products that many of us today would never allow in our bodies. But he was a very affable man, and so there was a debate to be had. So Barry Farber on WMC Radio was to narrate the debate. He was the moderator. On one side, I would be talking against sugar. On the other side, Dr. Fred Stare would be talking for sugar, or saying that it wasn't harmful. And as the professor, MD at Harvard, he clearly would have had an enormous amount of advantages. The trouble is he never showed up. And later we found out that he was on the tennis court and couldn't be bothered. Okay. But his protege, who also was a PhD, did show up on national radio. And there began the debate. And I listened to her talk. I listened to her arguments. And then I simply showed the studies from the peer-reviewed literature about the dangers of sugar. Sugar and heart disease. Sugar and cancer. Sugar and diabetes. Sugar and tooth decay. Sugar in obesity, sugar in bacterial overgrowth, and candida. Now, these were not my suppositions. This is what the scientific literature actually proved. And afterwards, in that debate, when I was at the elevator, I said, I'd like to give you these studies and see if you see anything in them, you know, that could alter your perspective. And she turned around and she looked at me. She snapped and says, I don't give a damn about your perspective, and I'm not going to take those, and got on the elevator and left. That foundation that she headed is known for its pro-big pharma, pro-drug, pro-sugar, pro-junk food, pro-GMO position. So this has been going on for a long time. Yet guess who gets invited every time there's a health issue? Those of us who don't have financial funding from big pharma, these foundations or think tanks? No. It's always these puppets that go forward. This is the latest information to add to why the public should have known back then, and to those people who were advocating, like William Duffy, great book, Sugar Blues, terrific person, by the way, really nice man, and all the other advocates against sugar, you were right. All of the people, including those that would be quoted by Jane Brody in the New York Times, you were all wrong. You were wrong then, you're wrong today. This is from Tufts University School of Nutritional Science. I'm going to quote it verbatim. It is also published in the peer-reviewed journal Circulation. That means all the cardiologists, all of the general practitioners should be reading this material. This is from a major university. It's a major study. It's 184,000 adults impacted. Here's exactly what they say. Now, why do I do this? Because I always do this. I think, how many people will be alive today or in better health today if they would have simply believed the information? But they couldn't believe the information because they couldn't believe the advocate or the messenger. And so the war on health has been a war on the messengers of health and environmental action and human rights. You look at who is attacked, who's vilified, who ends up on Wikipedia, which is the most disrespectable publication I know of. It is should never be used as a source. And I'll be doing a whole investigative report with the results on an upcoming program to show you that. Because there could be millions of people alive today, millions, had they just done their homework, listened to both sides, and then look to see where is the truth. Quote, consumption of sugary drinks may lead to an estimated 184,000 adult deaths each year worldwide, according to research published today in the journal Circulation and previously presented as an abstract at the American Heart Association Council on Epidemiology and Prevention. Quote, many countries in the world have a significant number of deaths occurring from a single dietary factor, sugar-sweetened beverages. It should be a global priority to substantially reduce or eliminate sugar-sweetened beverages from the diet, end quote. And that was from an MD, PhD, senior author of the study, and dean of the Fryden School of Nutrition, Science, and Policy at Tufts University in Boston. Now, this was a very comprehensive detailed global report on the impact of sugar-sweetened beverages and researchers estimated deaths and disabilities from diabetes, heart disease, and cancers. In this analysis, sugar-sweetened beverages were defined as any sugar-sweetened sodas and fruit drinks and sports energy drinks and sweetened iced teas or homemade sugary drinks such as Frescas that contained 50 calories per 8-ounce serving. So here's what they came up with. 133,000 of these deaths from diabetes, 45,000 deaths from cardiovascular disease, and 6,450 deaths from cancer. And, quote, back to the study. The impact of sugar-sweetened beverages varied greatly between populations. At the extremes, the estimated percentage of deaths was less than 1% in Japanese over 65 years or older, but 30% in Mexican adults younger than 45. And most of the 20 populous countries, Mexico had the highest death rate attributable to sugar-sweetened beverages, with an estimated 405 deaths per million. That's 24,000 deaths total. And the U.S. ranked second. So here we are. 35 years after that debate, and think of the people who suffered and died because they were, what did they suffer and die from? Sugar? Diabetes? Heart disease? Stroke? No. Those are secondary. Almost all death in the United States is because of our belief system. The most lethal thing you can have in life is a flawed belief system. So the person who wouldn't listen to those of us because we were not medical doctors and believed the doctor, including my own parents, well, that is the power of a belief system. And people frequently go to their death with their belief system unchallenged and unshaken. And that's why we have war, and that's why we're still a racist nation, and that's why we still don't have an equal rights amendment for women, and that's why we have 18 million hungry children, and that's why we've degraded our environment, and that's why we have a phony environmental movement in this country with prima donnas running around to head it, and that's why we have people still putting their money in banks that exploit them with credit cards that will give you 1% back. Just ask Samuel L. Jackson. Is there anything that man won't endorse? Mr. Jackson, why don't you ask, what do you pay monthly on a credit card? What is the standing interest? Where does it begin? 18%? What happens when you're late, as most people are? Goes up to what, 28%? How about a payday loan? Even the ones you advocate for. So you get 1% back? All right, let's just say that that's correct. You get 1% or 2% back, and you give them 18 to 28%. How is that even reasonable? It is not. But we pay attention to the message, and we're influenced by the messenger instead of looking for the truth. So we have something that's acute in this society. We have acute deficit of wisdom and an overabundance of information. I want you to hear something now. It is a very short but a compelling rap by Nick Cannon, Intelligence Meets Wisdom.
Intelligence meets wisdom. Once upon an element, a man named Intelligence questioned his own relevance. Why his new old friend Wisdom offered his benevolence. Now you could tell it was evident the two were a little hesitant because the respect and reverence for each other was obviously heaven sent. And that's when Intelligence asked, well, why do we hate? Wisdom's rebuttal, well, why do we love? Intelligence wondered what will become of his fate, while Wisdom just embraced each day just because. Now, Intelligence can prove how much he knows, but Wisdom shows how much he grows. Though Intelligence spends time searching for God, Wisdom sees that time is merely a fraud. Odd they both chose while out in a job to put their pros, cons, and pride aside. Why? Because the power of rivals subsides if the powerful rivals die. Wisdom's crew was like, ooh, ride. While Intelligence entourage just sighed, oh my. So as y'all body as you ride or die, because Wisdom knew only the true tried to be be wise. Intelligence replied, nigga, you ain't never lied. But there's something about these guys, they could not ever sever ties. Alone they could marvel, but together they mesmerize. Materialize, metamorphosis, more opposites incorporated and attracted than they actually realize. Differences. For instance, intelligence was man-made and wisdom is a spirit. Intelligence is loud, but the sound of wisdom must be silent to hear it. Intelligence is witty and quick, while wisdom is peaceful and still. Intelligence can be artificial when wisdom is real. Day and night, back and forth, they could debate turn for turn. But if you understand one without the other, further quandaries will forever burn. But for now, this intelligent case is closed, and the wise meeting of the minds is adjourned. While the blind has been leading the blind with frivolous concerns, we find that the true third eye lies intertwined between two universes of no return. In turn, these two terms will eternally be on good terms. In terms of the interim, the definitions have definitely and definitively been turned. Intelligence, the ability to learn. Wisdom, the ability to discern. Your turn.
And what do we have? We've had nothing but an input of supposed intelligence. The MDs, the PhDs, the so-called experts, the think tanks, the best and brightest, the Ivy League schools, the tenured professors who don't venture out, those who don't, into the real world, those who will pass laws in the United States or other countries without ever considering the outcome. Just one example of just one outcome that no one pays attention to, and that is removing the child tax credits. Who thinks about a child tax credit? And right now in England, George Osborne is thinking about removing the tax credit. Wouldn't hurt him. He's wealthy. Wouldn't hurt the prime minister. He's wealthy. Wouldn't hurt all the technocrats. They're wealthy. But what if you're just a single parent, and that tax credit could make an enormous difference? This is the difference between being wise enough to know the consequence of your action, but too intelligent to think that wisdom has any place in your equation.
Not sitting here saying to you at the moment, I'm making a choice of eat or heat, but if they take that kind of money away, then that may be the choice I'm having to make. It actually makes me want to cry, the thought of what things will be like if they take that money away. Sorry, I just get a bit emotional because it is actually really stressful.
I think kids need a happy family and they need shelter and food and water.
A couple of weeks ago, stories started coming out about the planned cuts that they're going to make on tax credits. Child tax credits, working tax credits boost my income. I only earn £11,000 a year. So that money does help every week for the bills, you know, the rent, the food. I've got an 11-year-old daughter who's starting secondary school. I've got a list that is as long as my arm of all the uniform requirements. When you're a single parent, you are on your own with a child. So, like it or not, you are going to be limited to the certain hours that you can work.
Because it's just me and her, we're normally always together. There's never been a time where we've been separated.
Money is tight. If you actually look at my bank account, I've got a couple of £100 in there and that is it. If you take, even if it's £100 a month away from me, that will make a huge difference.
I feel worried about her, but when she's happy, I feel really happy as well around her. We've got like a special link together.
People need to be made aware of this because the government needs to know the impact of what they're considering doing. I've worked all my life. But these people have no idea what their policies do to people like me.
Real people who are affected by the consequences of people who just use intellect to figure out how to do something without any base of spirituality, compassion, and care. That's your average Democrat, or corporate Republican. And yet the people who do have a sensibility, who are in touch, you never hear from them because they're excluded. They're the threat. Again, the belief system. Now, in the United States, we don't pay attention to the retreating sea ice, nor the rise in the water unless there's a hurricane. We think it will all pass or it won't impact us. We are wrong. This just came in an hour ago from the University of Toronto. I'll quote it verbatim. Retreating sea ice linked to changes in ocean circulation could affect European climate. Quote, retreating sea ice in the Iceland and Greenland seas may be changing the circulation of warm and cold water in the Atlantic Ocean and could ultimately impact the climate in Europe, says a new study by astrospheric physicists from the University of Toronto and their colleagues at Great Britain, Norway, and the United States. Quote, a warm Western Europe requires a cold North Atlantic Ocean, and the warming of the North Atlantic is now experiencing has the potential to result in a cooling over Western Europe. End quote. That was from a professor Moore of their Department of Chemical and Physical Sciences. Now, as I mentioned yesterday, this is exactly verbatim what I said yesterday. I gave the example of how as the warm currents from South America go up and into this area and bring down cold water, that keeps that circulatory belt going. If anything disrupts that for a period of time, and if it slows down or stops, you will no longer have that warm current. And as a result, Ireland, Scotland, England, France, Belgium, Germany, Spain, Greece, you're going to see a tremendous drop in temperature. So much so that it would impact much of your agriculture, and you would have to move to an indoor hydroponic system. Now, you would not go back to the ice age. What you would do is have anywhere from a 6 to a 12 degree drop, and a 6 to 12 degree drop would be just catastrophic. And we're there now, not the future, now. Remember, we've been in chaos theory. And a global warming effect, the Earth and the oceans, the retreat of the sea ice, means there won't be as much cold, dense water generated through a process known as oceanic convection, created a flow south and to feed the Gulf Stream. And if convection decreases, the Gulf Stream may weaken, thereby reducing the warming of the atmosphere in comparison to today. And that was published in Nature Climate Change in the current issue just out today. So what I've been predicting, what I've been explaining, just like 7 years ago on Roy of Hollywood, where I was for 31 years, 6 hours every Wednesday, and many of those people are still listening now over the Progressive Radio Network, I said, you're living in an unsustainable environment. Yes, there are many good things about living in California, but there's a lot that is not good. The congestion, the pollution, the particulate matter coming from China, the fact that you're on a fault line that is going to give way. There is no one debating it won't. It's just when, and you're past due on that, and the Pacific Rim, and also drought. And I said, at the end of the day, it is the drought that will be the most serious for the people living there. And indeed, with 38 million people living there, now you have a collapse last year of over a foot of land. You can drive up the roads, and I just did. I was just in California and lecturing. And you can see gas mains 18 inches out of the ground. Now, anything that's capable of dropping the land down. Why? Because you're sucking out all the water, creating these cavities. And as this cavitation occurs, there's nothing to support the land. So bridges, tunnels, homes, complexes, roadways, all are going to start cracking, bending, breaking. So you have a massive, massive infrastructural issue that you have to address. Plus, you're running out of water. Now, you will always have some water, but you're not going to have enough for everyone. And based upon the current using of your groundwater, and it's gone, in another 3 or 4 months, it's 100% gone, you're using the historic aquifers, and they're going to go. And then you're digging down to the deepest, and no one knows how deep they are, nor how much is there. So then you're going to have to go to desalinization, and that's $1 billion to $3 billion per plant, several years to make, and it's enormously energy costly. You're going to be doing major pollution, and you have no way of getting rid of the salt except to build these giant salt mounds or port back in the ocean, which will change the aqua system there. So even your biggest desalinization plant in California only affects 7% of one single county's population daily. That's what 30 million gallons of water a day can do. You need billion gallons of water a day. So imagine what has happened. So my suggestion is move. Let me say it again. Move. You're getting hit by a perfect storm. And most of all, you're going to see the property value collapse overnight. It won't be over years. But the people getting out are the people who see that their lifestyle is going to be altered, and they don't want that. They'll go to another place and recreate it. So that's what I suggest. Now, I want to go to Fukushima for an environmental segment for the second part. Here's the latest. This is from Robert Hunsinger from Counterpunch. Quote, "The Fukushima multiple nuclear disasters continue spewing out hot stuff like there's no tomorrow. By all appearances, it's getting worse, out-of-control nuclear meltdown. On June 19th, TEPCO reported the highest ever readings of strontium-90 outside the Fukushima plant ports. The readings were 1 million BQM3 of strontium-90 at two locations near water intakes for reactor 3 and 4. TEPCO has not been able to explain the spike in readings. The prior highest reading ever was 700,000. Strontium-90, by the way, for this audience, it's a byproduct of nuclear reactors or during the explosion of nuclear weapons, meaning it is considered the most dangerous component of radioactive fallout from a nuclear weapon. And it's a cancer-causing substance because it damages genetic material, your DNA, and cells. And strontium-90 is not found in nature. It's a byproduct of the nuclear world of today. Strontium-90 was only recently discovered as of August 2014 for the first time ever by the Vermont Health Department in groundwater at the Vermont Yankee Nuclear Power Station. And when a fission chain reaction of strontium-235 or plutonium-239 is active in a nuclear power station containment vessel, it produces a vast array of deadly radioactive isotopes. And strontium-90 is but one of those. So somewhere in Fukushima Daiichi, a lot of atoms are splitting, and ergo a lot of strontium-90 pops out and hangs around for decades upon decades. This is not a small problem. Which is why, wasn't it Albert Einstein who said nuclear power is one hell of a way to boil water? For example, a large amount of strontium-90 erupted into the atmosphere from Chernobyl nuclear explosion 1986 and spread over the whole Soviet Union and parts of Europe. And thereby, strontium-90, along with other radioactive isotopes, kills and maims people, not just then, decades later, over a million, just in that area. Here's the problem. They've been farming in Fukushima. Most Americans are not aware of that because our media doesn't cover it. And because of the Fukushima nuclear meltdown, farmers in the greater area have had a tough time. And for example, Japanese farmers met with TEPCO and government officials, including the official in charge of the Ministry of Economy and Trade and Industry. It was videoed, and I've seen this. It's a 13-minute video of farmers meeting with officials showing farmers testifying about contaminated food. Now, here's what they said in the quote from the tape. "We won't eat it ourselves, but we sell it. I know there's radiation in what we grow. I feel guilty about growing and selling them to consumers." End quote. Well, sure enough, officials from the New Taipei City Department of Health in Taiwan and other law enforcement authorities seized mislabeled products from Japan. It seems that, quote, more than 283 Japanese food products imported from the radiation-stricken area near Fukushima Daiichi nuclear disaster were found to be relabeled as having come from other areas of Japan and sold to local consumers. It was from the China Post in an article entitled "Mislabeling Japanese Food Products Originating Near Fukushima." Meanwhile, within a couple of months of the illicit, underhanded, devious mislabeling incident, Taiwan enforcement stricter controls on Japanese food imports, there was a meeting, and they said, "We're not going to take any more." And then China said, "We're not taking this stuff." So who's getting it? And you know, when people can make money, they'll do anything they have to make it. So Japan would be wise to take an honest look, and not at what Secretary of State Hillary Clinton signed, a secret pact with Japan within a month of the meltdown for the U.S. to continue importing Japanese foodstuff, no questions asked. Do we really check for radiation of anything out of Japan? No, we don't. So just keep in mind, when it comes from Japan, do you know where it comes from? Do you know if it's safe? Has it been tested? I think that the very least we need is to have that as a major concern. Also, what I have seen is that Big Pharma is incapable of doing anything except making massive amounts of money, which, as a corporation, that's what they're mandated to do. They have to get the greatest return on investment for their stockholders. Okay? But then what about the moral equation? What about the ethics? What about the legality of selling something that could actually be doing more harm than good? Well, you get by that three ways. One, you buy the influence in the federal regulatory agencies, so even though you're creating something that's a poison, may not do any good or may be killing people, you're not going to be held accountable. You may at some point have to pay a fine, but it's a tiny amount of the ill-gotten gains, and you don't have to give any of the ill-gotten gains back. Two, you make sure that you control the media outlets. You flood their advertising with your products. So if anyone decides to do an expose, they'll be reminded that, do you really want to lose $100 or $200 million in revenue? No. Then don't do that expose. And three, they front groups that are AstroTurf. These are trolls. And these people, one person can crash into a consumer group or an environmental group or a health group and plant misinformation and stories and attack people. And the pharmaceutical industry has a lot of these people working for it. And they are the ones who control it. But occasionally, not often, but occasionally, someone who cannot be corrupted comes forward to tell the truth. And then it kind of, everybody has this very kind of hands behind the back, holding your fingers together, sweating, looking down, because you know you're going through a moment of humiliation and embarrassment. And this is all of psychiatry. Why? Because you've had that moment. Professor Peter Gochi. Who is he? Well, one of the most respected scientists, physicians in the world. His resume could outdo almost any resume you could bring from anyone. He is one of the few people in the world of science to have 70 peer-reviewed journal articles, each different, in the big five medical journals: The Lancet, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the Annals of Internal Medicine, New England Journal of Medicine. And his research has been cited more than 15,000 times. And he just got angry. And he decided to tell the truth. But he's no ordinary physician. He is a scientist. And so important is his work that with the Cochrane Group, one of the most respected, if not the most respected, scientific research centers in the world, he wrote an article, and it was just published in the British Medical Journal. He argues that psychiatric drugs, quote, have only minimal benefits, and that 500,000 people over the age of 65 living in Western countries die each year because of these drugs. Wow. Wow. Think of that. That's more than all the people killed in civil wars in the world combined. Wow. That's more than all the people dying of diabetes every year in the United States, or stroke. That's each year, and that's just people over 65. No one has done the calculation of how many people under, how many vets killing themselves are on psych drugs. Almost all of them. And what do? Well, according to 60 Minutes on Sunday night, they bring in a new guy who ran Procter & Gamble, was a graduate of West Point, who wants to honor the soldiers. I agree with that. I have no problem with this gentleman. I think he is an honest person. But the model itself, the belief system, is what's wrong. Just hear me out here. What good does it do to have an honest, well-intentioned person of integrity running the second largest department of government with, I think, 325,000 employees, the Veterans Administration, if the model of care for people in a conflict zone or coming out of a conflict zone is flawed? You give them a standard medical psychiatric evaluation and you give them drugs. And what if the drugs then cause suicide, which they do? Then how in the world, by giving more people medication, have you helped the situation? You've just caused more people to die. Now, I'm not blaming this person because I'm sure he's not aware of this, but others are. So we should take a look at how many kids commit suicide. The number one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-old boys in America is suicide. When I was going to school, no one committed suicide. And I went to Parkersburg High School, the largest high school in the state of West Virginia. Not a single kid. So I asked my father, my mother, I asked the school teachers back then. They didn't have to retire. They could work until they died. And some of them worked forever there, and they were wonderful. Never heard of it. Today, number one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-olds. So shouldn't we pay attention to this? Shouldn't this be an issue? Shouldn't this be important? It should be, but it's on no one's talking point list. So Professor Gochi goes on to say that, quote, the benefits of psychiatric drugs have been wildly exaggerated. Now, according to this British Medical Journal article, he notes that most psychiatric drug trials produce, quote, unreliable evidence because they are conducted mostly on people who, until recently, were taking other drugs. And hence, there's no such thing as improvement from someone who's on a drug and getting off of it. Specifically, he notes that trials of the antidepressants Effexor and Prozac showed almost no efficacy over a placebo. And the trials of the ADHD drugs have been ambiguous. And while those of schizophrenic drugs contain troubling elements. Quote, here's what he says, that these drugs can be immensely harmful over long term. And so here's a person from inside the scientific community, the medical community, who's telling all the scientists and physicians these drugs shouldn't be used. They're killing 500,000 senior citizens every year. Every year. So let's just back it up. Let's go back the last 20 years. So if his statistics hold up, it would mean that 10 million people have died from using psychiatric medication who didn't have to. I don't care how you call it. I call that medical genocide, and that's why I'm doing this new documentary called Manufacturing Madness that exposes them. And what do you see the hidden camera work that I have? It will send a message to them. Now, we're going to finish off today by some things about the Greek situation. First and foremost, I believe that the entire world economy is a bubble. And different bubbles will deflate at different rates with different outcomes. The more debt you have, the greater the negative outcome of the bubble deflating. In the United States, we are nothing but a bubble. Wall Street, a bubble. The real value shouldn't be $18,000, should be around $6,000. But the corporate America has $26 trillion in debt. That's a bubble. It can borrow money, so it goes out and buys this competition or spends it, but it's not paying its debts. Personal mortgages, no one should be buying a house now because you're going to get a crash in that market. The real estate market, the professional real estate market, a bubble. Bonds, a bubble. So here's from the central bank of central banks. It's called the Bank of International Settlements. It's the shadowy central bank of central banks, The world as it stands, according to Max Slavo, on this is, quote, incapable of combating another global financial crash. Now, mind you, this is what the Bank of International Settlements is saying. we can't handle another financial crash, a crash that there is every reason to think is coming. And that's because the economy remains in the hands of the Federal Reserve and other central banks. So all they're doing around the world is they keep pumping up the banking system, the financial system, with loans at zero interest, and that's a bubble. The world will be unable to fight the next global financial crash as central banks have used up their ammunition trying to tackle the last crisis, and central banks have backed themselves into a corner after repeatedly cutting interest rates to shore up their economies, and they've also had these quantitative easings, which is giving trillions of dollars to the worst corporations and the worst banks who then go out there and gamble with it. But to the average person, they cut your wages, they cut the benefits, and they keep a society literally at poverty's door. And there was a time, a long time, 1945 to about 1980, when people had enough money. They could go to school. They could have no debt. They didn't have credit cards. They had savings. All that's gone. Now to the Greek crisis. I got a lot of people who want to know about that. First of all, what's it mean? It means that the European Central Bank, including the International Monetary Fund, is demanding that Greece pay back all of that it owes, like $180 billion. But Greece doesn't have that money. And during the last conservative government, they said, okay, we'll give you more money. But remember, when they give money, when they give one of these tranche loans, over half of that goes back to the people that loan the money. Only a small percentage goes to help with pensioners and pay salaries. And none of it goes for infrastructure. So they just keep getting deeper and deeper into debt. So then they say, we'll privatize everything. Your roads, your water, your gas, all those wonderful, you know, historical places you have, the Acropolis, privatize them. We'll sell them at fire prices to major corporations or individuals who can then own them. Your ports, privatize it. So then what would the Greeks be left with? How about nothing? And then they wanted to cut back on the pensions. They did. Salaries, they did. Fire employees, they did. And as a result, their austerity program threw the Greek economy into the toilet. People were dumpster diving. People were committing suicide. Huge numbers of people committed suicide. To their credit, the Greek populace still maintained whatever standard of living and ethic it could, in spite of being a hit from every side. So now, if they pay off this loan they owe, they will have to take more money from people who already don't have money. So how do you stimulate an economy through massive austerity? You don't. It can't be done. But you keep making more and more money, more and more profit. So then the suggestion is, let the people vote. Let them say, yes, pay back the debt and make whatever changes you have to, and we'll just suffer through it. Or say no, in which case we'll be thrown out of the European Union and we won't have their currency, the euro, anymore. We'll go back to our own currency, and that currency, the troika, the original currency that they have, it'll probably drop in value, probably upwards of 30%. That's the likely outcome of the drachma, which is the European dollar. But think of the countries you can do business with that would help you in the short term. India, China, Russia, there are other countries that would do business with you. So you won't just fall through the cracks. And that's what they're looking at now. And so it's going to be a battle, and it's going to be determined in a day or two. They're playing really hardball because they want to teach all the other poor countries, including that are in the European Union and owed massive amounts of money. They want to teach them there's a consequence. You don't want to bail out. And Germany's really behind all this. And The Germans have a way of irritating everyone all the time. And they're saying, well, their Greeks are lazy and don't pay their taxes. Excuse me, Germany. The Greeks do pay their taxes, and they're not lazy. But if you talk about the oligarchs in Greeks, the richest 1%, you're right. They don't pay taxes, and they are lazy. And they haven't paid taxes. And they've been corrupt. And they took 50 billion euros and put them into Swiss banks. And they, all the money that you give it to the banking system. My suggestion, bail on all the debt, go back to your own currency and create a national bank. Create your own currency. You can control it, work with other countries. You'll go through a tough period and you'll come back out of it. And then you can work by establishing better standards of living by supporting the Greek population and small Greek businesses and say goodbye to the euro. I also would say the same thing to Italy, France, Ireland. You're loaded with debt. You're right behind Greece. Say goodbye to the European Union. It's a whole corrupt concept and it's never really worked. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day.